Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Our show focus today is how can I ace a job interview to get the job I want. My guest today is Sandra Lamb, author of How to Write It, a complete guide to everything you will ever write, which is in its third edition. Sandra Lamb is a job interview and lifestyle and etiquette expert. If you want to call and speak to Sandra, please call in at 347-324-3460. Again, that's 347-324-3460. Or you can post your question in the chat room and I can read it on the air. To begin with, I'm going to play a short clip from Sandra's website. It's called here, Help for Those Who Are Job Hunting.
Job interviewing got you down? Even got your networking friends depressed? Maybe you've been bitten by a bad interview once too many times. Just thinking about another job interview could make you want to take a nap. Or it could be you think you already know it all when it comes to interviewing for that dream job. Stop. Your best friends might just have a couple of re-energizing ideas that could put you back in the hunt. So take a minute, will you? Sit. Stay. Watch. And listen. Who knows better than a man's and woman's best friend about how to get someone to reach out, linger a few minutes, take a second look, reconsider, then offer up the prize, in this case, your dream job. Your best friend knows how it's done. Rule number one, arrive early, at least 15 minutes. Take one last look in the sun visor mirror. Everything okay? Are you smiling? Rule number two, smile. Rule number three, put a smile in your voice too. That's it. Are you dressed the part? Wearing your best color? Maybe even your power tie. But don't put your feet on the furniture. Rule number four, dress to feel confident. Now show them your best stick. Yes. The one you've been rehearsing in front of the mirror at home, complete with real-life examples and numbers. Yes, posture is important. Too laid back and you seem disinterested. Too eager and you seem desperate. Strike a balance. Show your best side. Relax. Lean slightly forward. Make eye contact. And, don't forget, smile. Never flaunt your shortcomings. Ask them intelligent questions that could just seal the deal. And don't forget to ask for the job. And make eye contact while you're speaking. Then, sit quietly. Are you still smiling? Now, smile all the way home. There's nothing like the feeling you get when you just aced your job interview.
Sandra Lamb, author of How to Write It, can help.
Go to Sandra Lamb's human job interview quiz on her website, sandralamb.com. Pull down the quizzes menu and click on Ace Your Next Job Interview. Go ahead. Do it. Now.
Well, good morning, Sandra. Welcome to the program.
I think we should actually tell your audience, if they go to www.sandralamb.com and look at the second video on the right-hand side, these comments will kind of bring a smile to their face in addition to the fact of the good information there. It's actually man's best friend, of course, is a variety of dogs who actually live in my neighborhood. And I've used their photographs and the audio to sort of tell the story of those important things about the job interview that, you know, show up before time, you will obviously feel more relaxed and those other cautions.
Well, they really work. Keila, as well, I really appreciate it that we joined the program. I guess to begin with, tell us about yourself and what inspired you to write your book.
Okay, well, I actually started professional life as a technical writer, and it didn't take long to realize that the engineers, the brilliant, brilliant engineers I was working with, were sort of at a loss when it came to doing the kind of effective communications that their job required. And when I went more into management, I found the same thing true everywhere. So I said, I think what I really need to do is write a desktop reference that someone can grab for all those business situations. And also I've included a lot of actually most of the personal kinds of communications that everyone needs to know how to write effectively. So it's sort of a desktop reference for, you know, you pick it up, you look at the particular communication that you need to write and go to that chapter, and the directions, kind of the directions are there. But what a lot of people tell me they really like about it are the model letters that I have, or the model,
wow,
excuse me, or the model communications that I include in each chapter. So, you know, it won't exactly fit your situation, but all the information is there for you to either change components, or direct you through. And a lot of people have told me, even writers, a lot of writers, that of course they know how to do this, but it saves them time. Even if, you know, you are not the challenged engineer in this situation or the beginning management person, it will save you time because it walks you through the steps very quickly.
Great. I guess let's segue back a little step regarding writing itself. I mean, for some people it comes fairly easy. Some people it becomes really difficult to put their thoughts into words, and they have to draft. And you have some people just get frustrated, and they say, okay, this canned thing will work, and I can try to personalize it. If we go back to the basics for a person who maybe not have the college-level education, maybe they just barely finished high school, what can they do in that perspective, looking at grammar itself? How should they approach in writing something? Should they keep it short and simple? Or what tips that you can offer them to help them out that will still make them look as good? They might be very good in a craft and a trade, but really don't have the gift of pen.
Well, certainly if we're applying that, your question, to the resume and to the cover letter that you want to put with it when you send it out, keeping your sentences short is very important for everyone, not only,
okay,
you know, not only for someone maybe who's in one of the trades and feels a little uncomfortable about the whole business of writing, but for the very experienced people as well. And, of course, the element to really key into is those active verbs that you can start with, and the really effective way to think of your resume is really not even to think of it in complete sentences, but to think of it in terms of bulleted items of actual demonstrated skills that you can reflect in accomplishments with numbers whenever possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, revised manual in the case of perhaps, you know, a technical writer that got 98% positive reviews from, you know, management, or something that indicates increased sales by 32% in 6 months by use of whatever, you know, bonuses or incentives or something. In the case,
wow,
of trades, you know, shaved off 45 minutes of so many hours of production time by doing something. So think in terms of your accomplishments, what your skill set has actually enabled you to do. But if we could step back one step before that, Tim,
mm-hmm,
let's think about taking those, and I've sort of lost my train of thought here, taking those skills and expressing them that way, but applying them to the actual requirements of a specific job. If I can sort of spin back to the impact on your resume, to be super effective, think of your resume as a job-specific document. So for each job that you're going to apply for, if you can look at the ad, or if you have networked and you know what the person with the power to hire you is looking for, obviously he's identified or she's identified some problem in their organization. And how have they expressed that problem? What are they looking for? If you can take the information from what they're looking for, and then take your skill set and express that in terms of things you have actually done in numbers whenever possible, then apply that. And sometimes I even tell my clients to maybe even think of creating two columns. Maybe you would do this in your cover letter, but certainly in your resume, in the left column, the things the employer is looking for, and in the right column, you express yourself in terms of you are the answer for those specific elements of the problem that they are trying to solve. So if you'd have a bulleted item in the left column that said that they needed someone to increase sales. And in the right column, you would express increased sales in X company by 32% in 6 months. So, you know, so you're presenting yourself as the solution to a specific problem.
Wow, that's powerful there.
And of course, this also comes back to the fact that before you write that resume, you obviously want to have done the due diligence involved in finding out that information. What exactly is the problem that this organization is trying to solve by hiring a new employee? Mm-hmm. And also part of that information may well be, who is the person who has the power to hire me? And what's the personality, you know, everything you can learn about that person, obviously, is going to be a huge benefit for you in writing your resume, first of all, and the cover letter, because in the cover letter, then you can address the specific person, not obviously to whom it may concern or dear human resources person, but you're specifically getting to the person who has the power to hire you. In addition to that, you may learn some of his or her quirks or, you know, preferences or personality traits or something that's going to enable you to be most effective in writing the resume, but also in the next step of actually getting being effective in the interview.
Wow. So going backwards, as you mentioned, No. This helps. It's step by step. Back in time, they said write things on a note card. So you say just take this sheet of paper and just divide it in half, put, hey, here's the employers, what they're looking for. This is how you're going to solve their issue. Bullet point. Is it like 3 or 5 bullet points you want to make? Not long, but just keep it that simple?
Absolutely. Make them use active verbs, make them use numbers, and make them, I'll use the word pithy, you know, make them very succinct and to the point. If you lay it out that way, you're going to put yourself at the front of the line simply because, you know, when we all know that there are a bazillion applicants for every job opening out there, mm-hmm. and so the person who's looking at these doesn't have a lot of time, isn't going to take a lot of time, and they certainly don't want to wade through a lot of paragraphs of your job description. And that's often the mistake that people applying for jobs make. They, you know, their resume reads like a job description. But what the employer is actually looking for is someone who can solve their problem.
Wow, you're the problem solver.
Right.
So kind of give some examples of some action verbs that they can use in their letter. Numbers are really, they can figure that out. It's pretty easy. And make themselves distinctive, that's pretty easy. Give us some action words that a person should be able to use in a resume and a cover letter.
Okay. Certainly, use something like changed, directed, spearheaded, revised. You know, action verbs that you can actually start right after your bullet, right after your bullet point.
Okay.
Something that expresses, you know, what it'll obviously depend on what your particular accomplishments are, exactly what you've done. Used, mm-hmm. found, solved, you know, anything.
Those great examples.
Yeah, retooled, you know, in anything that sort of encapsulates what you have actually, the action that you have actually done.
Okay, and in that, again, how long should a resume be? A cover letter should be one page. And what type of font it should be, and, you know, should it be two paragraphs and that's it, or should it be one paragraph on your cover letter?
Well, I think always in both the resume and the cover letter, think short and write short.
Okay.
Because we're back to that same problem, and there's another clue that if you write short. Visually, and a lot of these are now sent by email, but if you are sending it, also if you are sending it in the mail, the white mm-hmm. space, the white space around what you write is actually powerful. It says the person looking at it unconsciously says, I can read this, there's not much here. You know, I can quickly get through this. Whereas if you have dense paragraphs, you know, on your, particularly on your cover letter, it's a turnoff for the person. I mean, they intend to read it. They'll say, okay, well, I'll put this in this pile, you know, and I'll
get
back
later.
To it. Yes, right. So, and then if they come upon three in the pile that are very short and they have these, you know, powerful statements of how they have problem solved in their last position, they're going to, mm-hmm. they might gravitate towards that applicant and you in the other pile, you know, never get the call back. So write short, yes, write mm-hmm. short. And I would say on the cover letter, what you determine are maybe one or two points of sort of the crux of what the person is looking for. Recap those things
okay.
in one paragraph. And then in the second paragraph, make it a sort of a call for action. You know,
wow.
I'm looking forward to being interviewed. I'm, you know, whatever. The best possible scenario, of course, is if you have been able to network to this person, if you are addressing that person directly and sending it to the person with the power to hire, maybe someone has recommended you. Joe Blow mm-hmm. has, you know, Joe, and maybe Joe has talked to the person with the power to hire, Jim, and said, I really think you should talk to Bob. You know, for this job, he's got the skill set you need, whatever. So if you have that in your pocket, obviously, you will automatically, of course, go to the top of the pile. But you also, you know, will say that in your cover letter, obviously. And you will, of course, address that and direct it directly to his or her email or in some cases, not so many these days, but in some cases, send it to on a hard copy to his or her address.
Okay. So going back to the point, should it be like 12-point or 10-point font? Should you keep it basic and simple? Stay with the basics when you do your letter and do your cover sheet?
I think, you know, it would. There are a couple caveats, but I would say almost always use a 11 or 12-point type.
Okay.
And stay with some of the traditional fonts here's the caveat, unless you are in a creative kind of endeavor, maybe you are applying as a as an art person for an ad agency or a copywriter for an ad agency. In those cases, of course, in those cases, you might use a video too. You might use something else besides, you know, just the letter sent by email. But I would say, you know, your standard fonts are probably the best to use in almost all cases.
Perfect. One of the things you always want to mention is have someone to read, have several people read your resume to make sure it's free of errors. It makes sense. Maybe it makes sense in your head, but not making sense to anybody else. Or
right.
Maybe one thing can turn somebody else out. And I will say, mainly put it into diverse groups. Don't use just your friends. Hey, take someone at church or take someone that even at the library, take it over there and say, what do you think about this? And try to get someone outside of your group to kind of give your opinion. Does this make sense as well? I mean,
and there's one other
something.
Thing. Yes, and there's one other thing, Kim, mm-hmm. that often is extremely helpful. And I think every writer and author will tell you this same thing, that mm-hmm. if at all possible, after you've written it, after you've got it ready, just give it some breathing time. Put it down for whatever amount of time you have, and then pick it up again and read it out loud to yourself. Often you will find, and I totally agree with your point about having other people review it, and not only people who love you like your mother, but, you know, but people who might be a little more critical of you, you know, and particularly, of course, the more aligned they are with the person who has the power to hire you, you know, if they are in the same industry, hire the same kind of people, et cetera, you know, that obviously is going to be beneficial. Or someone with HR background, you know, yes, all those things. And you're in the case where you don't have those, your point about the library is probably a fairly good one. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if you have formed a support group, which is very beneficial in these hard-to-get-a-job times, obviously you would have them as well look at it. But you also, I agree with your point that the more people and the more diverse, you often don't have the luxury of that kind of time element. But if you have at least a couple, three, certainly those reviews will be maybe valuable to you.
Okay. In the sense of should it be always be on white paper, should a person use any other color paper for their resume, or should it stay with basic white?
Well, if it's being sent by hard copy, I think for most kinds of traditional jobs, you know, the standard is a white or off-white. But sometimes people have found that doing the little extra thing, and actually this is this has worked for some of my clients, in putting writing a note at the bottom or putting a red dot on their resume. I mean, it sounds bizarre, but it has, mm-hmm. you know, it sort of flagged them, and it said, obviously this depends on the kind of position you're applying for, because they're, you know, if you are a banker, you obviously don't want to go outside the norm very far. If you are in a little different career, maybe even one of the trades, writing a handwritten PS on the bottom, I look forward to our interview, or, you know, I mean, something that makes sense is probably not a bad thing. They're certainly going to read that part of it. So, you know, that part you would want to make effective.
We're going to make sure it's good penmanship, too. might have.
Oh, might some of us are challenged in that department, for sure.
So that can say, oh, my God, I can't read this. So you might
yeah,
want to
well,
have.
Yeah, well, right. If they can't read it, that is going to be a problem, right?
Yeah, it might want, even if it's a little girly or whatever, at least that makes you look pretty good. That, hey, at least they they have good penmanship. I have a question here. Someone's asking, what about back and front? Does that make a difference than versus if they staple? I guess I'm assuming they're talking about their resume itself instead of extending to a second page cover sheet. But however, the resume is back in front, so they just have one sheet.
You know, I would really encourage people for almost all kinds of careers to keep their resume to a single page.
Okay.
And certainly not on the back. So if for some reason it has to go into a second page, and I would think, you know, I would think if it has to go into a second page, probably your problem is probably editing, not, you know, certainly physicians or academicians who have to have a long list of all their publications and everywhere they went
definitely.
To school. There's our multiple pages. But in the case of most careers, I think that we're one page is certainly all that's going to be read, if that much is going to be read. So I think, you know, the rule is condense it to one page. And a lot of this, of course, too, is your arrangement on the page and how you set it up. You can save a lot of space if you, you know, if you do your resume in a certain way versus having multiple spaces between sections. You know, I mean, there are a lot of ways you can conserve space and still keep it to that nice, clean, there isn't much here, I can read this quickly sort of approach.
Okay, I follow.
And I think almost always we don't want to go back more, for most people, we don't want to go back more than 10, 12, 13 years in our experience. So if you're going back to, you know, the job you had at 12 where you worked part-time, you know, in the corner grocery store, I think you probably need to eliminate that.
Okay, I follow. So they don't look badly. They're just really interested within the last 15 years or so.
I think so. And, yeah. And actually, there's another big caution here for a lot of people. You know, it is probably true that we don't like to say it, that there is some bias in the marketplace against people, midlife people and older, who are looking for a job. So if they're not going back further than this, they obviously aren't appearing to be, you know, on the older end of the scale. Which,
I follow.
Yes, which I think obviously can work to their benefit.
Okay, so if a person who's in their 40s and 50s, mid-career or in their 50s, they're going to have a long history. Now, it's not, you know, in the last 20 years, really, a lot of people have just changed from job to job. It's not like you've been at Ford for 30 years or 25 years, and then you're going to change jobs midstream unless you're a high executive. But the ones that are in their 40s who have changed jobs for several reasons, relocation or this or that, they're going to have multiple jobs. I mean, throughout a 20-year period, it might be difficult for a person to fit that on one page, but each job have their own thing they want to cover. If it's an account exec, that you moved up to a region account exec or territory manager, you know, the stair step of career, and then you change jobs because now you have a higher paying job and better position. How can you get that all on one page, or should you just say list a job, not to say exactly what you did, and just go from there, and then take the last two or three jobs and list what the details are?
There are a couple of ways to approach this. First of all, I think my instruction about not going back more than 10 or 12 years is it will help eliminate some of the longer career kind of potholes that exist out there. But of course, obviously, if there has been a change of careers, the other tool, or if there has been an unemployment, a period of unemployment, or, you know, or something, or going back to school or something, that I have three different types of resumes that may be covered in How to Write It in the resume chapter. And the first, of course, is the one we're most familiar with, and that's the chronological one, where we start from the most recent and we work our way back in experience. And that's okay. When I talked about, you know, it restricting your resume to the last 10 or 12 years. That's the portion I'm talking about, you know, narrowing down, because perhaps a lot of your a lot of the beginning things you did in your career obviously built to the job you have now. And what you really want the person to focus on is what you're doing now that really prepared you for doing this new job. The next kind of resume I talk about in the chapter on how to write it is the functional resume. And this works best for someone. Actually, I had a client who had been in the workforce. She got married. She was out of the workforce for a period of time, and she was coming back into the workforce. So for her, this kind of a resume was most effective because she didn't want to show chronologically, you know, where she had been for the last 10 years. She wanted to show what her skills were. And so she started by listing what her management skills were in this case, and then what her personal and supervision and training skills were, and then some of the things that she actually did, and those were sort of stated in sort of, you know, the kind of bulleted using a power verb statements that we were talking about before. So This allowed her, you know, not to look like she's not skilled enough. She does not have recent enough experience to be able to do this job. In fact, this particular woman had done a lot of volunteer work, and she'd actually used her skill set in this high-powered sort of volunteer job that she had done. So she included those skills, and I would encourage anyone who has done that. It not only keeps your skills sharp, but it also, I think you should also include that in your resume. But using a functional resume was effective for her and can be effective for a lot of people. Then I'd also use a third kind of resume, which is a creative resume. And that, of course, can include a lot of things. And there we're going to, you know, the people we were talking about earlier who are applying for a copywriting job or an artist job with an ad agency or something like that, where they can best show their skills, probably, you know, by using a audio video tape or, you know, or a disc or, you know, something else.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that in a few seconds. Let's take a station break for play a ad from our sponsor, and then we'll talk about the video ad and move towards the interview itself and your book. Again, this is Tim Jacquet with the Core Business Show with Sandra Lamb.
Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com.
Again, Tim Jacquet with the Core Business Show. I have Sandra Lamb, How to Write It. Sandra, I guess we can go back into the last thing we talked about before the break was the video. The video puts us on a spot. So I just did an interview a few months ago with some flight attendants, and we had this conversation that you really, when you go in front of them, you must do the dog and pony show to get a job at an airline as a flight attendant. It's all about everything. They look at the complete package. Looking at a video, they're going to be looking at the complete package because you're really on the spot and you really can't take anything for granted. How will a person present a well-presented video? Because this is going to put them in the spotlight. It might make a difference if they get an interview versus paper. At least there's some curiosity behind it. Say, hey, let me bring this person in.
Yes, absolutely. And you make a good point with the airline flight attendant position because, of course, any time, and the same would be true, of course, for a lot of sales positions, what the employer would love to see is this person who has a certain amount of charisma and relates well to people, who obviously has a great smile and can present themselves very well. In the case of a flight attendant, you know, eons ago, it was all about how you looked, obviously, and, you know, we don't have those restrictions. we don't admit that we have those restrictions now. Anyway, but obviously, it's how you present yourself, and what better way, you know, to do it than through a video. I also have realized in some really high-profile kinds of organizations, they are looking for, quote, diversity, end quote. And if you happen to have the kind of diversity that they're looking for, this could well be, you know, that might not be apparent on paper or through an email. So a video in that case would be, that would obviously give you a big advantage because it would be, oh, this is, you know, this is the kind of person we are looking to hire. We need, you know, we need people from with this kind of profile. So all those things obviously would be situations where the sort of creative approach of doing a Skype interview or and actually a lot of we used to call them headhunters, but now a lot of the recruiting organizations are doing these, and they are using this as a tool in actually seeing the person and interviewing them. They're using it as a tool to see whether or not this is the kind of person the employer would be interested in interviewing, and also to use it as kind of a practice session for the applicant where, you know, they can kind of say, you know, you aren't presenting yourself well in this particular way, and give them suggestions before they actually go to the interview. We all know that obviously getting to that interview is all important, but we certainly don't want to blow it once we're there. So all these things, and that's why in my little video on my website, I talk about, you know, practicing in front of the mirror, because mm-hmm. you get there, you want to make sure that you make the most of this opportunity.
Should they practice, for example, if they do a video, should they practice like a week or two or three days to make sure they mean really, really comfortable in being in the video environment? You know, even experienced actors had to do retakes 18 and 50 different times, even models. But should they spend a certain amount of time practicing for that particular video? And if so, during that practice, where should they do it? Should they do it outside or indoors or well lit place? What is your advice on that?
Well, I think that the practice session in front of the mirror is probably your best shot, don't you? Because you're actually seeing
sure.
what you do. In addition to which, we'll go back to your point earlier about having people look at your resume. If the closer someone is to the sort of position that you're looking for, if they can review your video and critique it, that's obviously, that could well be a plus. You know, sometimes I always sort of hesitate to give people the advice of depending on this too much, because if you involve too many people, you can get conflicting advice. You know, at some point you've got to sort of say, I agree with Joe, but I don't agree with, you know, Susie on this. I think I'm doing fine. I'm sitting slightly forward in my seat. I'm smiling. I look calm. My shoulders look relaxed. I look interested. I'm focusing on the person who's interviewing me. You know, I mean, you know, so you have to use your best judgment is my point also. But certainly in front of the mirror is the best way to start. And if you're setting this up yourself and you are either doing it on Skype or you're doing it then in front of your own video camera and putting it together, you will have the opportunity to review it afterward. Obviously, you want to show it to other people as well.
Okay. And the resume, someone had a question regarding LinkedIn. I wish they'd call in. But on LinkedIn, since it's a professional website now, they should also post their resume there, because you never know who's going to be watching or listening, and make sure it's 100% complete. Any tips as they pasted their resume on LinkedIn, what they should, since it's asking for a lot more information, should they post everything, the entire career history, with all these additional things into it, or should they keep it pretty simple and basic, the same, only the 12 years or the 15 years?
Well, I think probably, again, briefer is better. And another
okay.
thing that can be very, very effective on websites such as LinkedIn, and obviously these are the go-to place for a lot of job searches now, But those people you have worked with, those people who know you as an accomplished, skilled professional, have them ask them to do a recommendation for you, and you will see those posted on LinkedIn. I think those are obviously highly effective.
I agree with you because then it saves the employer for getting. They can take the information, but at least say they can get a viewpoint, the character of the person, and it might be make a difference of a person who has and who doesn't. But I'm sure in the future they're going to go to this video type thing. But I guess it's kind of hard to imagine that if you work in a company and you do a video, I guess when you leave there you do a video, and you probably have to take it down when you get employed. I guess just segueing into the interview process itself, what should you look like and what should you do and what things not to do during an interview?
Well, the I think the biggest point here is obviously to go as armed as you can with the most in-depth information you can garner about the organization, and certainly about the specific job, and certainly about the person for whom you would work, the person in most cases then who has the power to hire you. Often now, of course, that is done by a team of people, so you will sort of go through a battery, of interviews, and so there will be other people. There won't probably be just one person. There will probably be a panel or a team of people with whom you will interview, and the decision to hire or not to hire will be, they're weighted, I think, differently in different organizations, but it will be sort of the sum of everyone's opinion who's involved in that process. So anyway, the more you know about it, and the more you've practiced, Tim, we come back to that same thing about practicing until you really feel relaxed. Being relaxed is really key because it frees up your mind. It obviously makes you appear better to the person or persons who are interviewing you, and then you'll those questions you want to ask, those points you want to make, will come easily to mind. So preparing, obviously, and as sort of silly as my video on my website sounds, there are those really basic elements of being there early. Then you can be more relaxed. Obviously, you don't feel rushed and whipping in unprepared. And while you were sitting for this, I've said 15 minutes in the video, but while you were sitting there in the waiting room waiting to be interviewed, you kind of get a flavor for things. And it's somehow, that in itself is relaxing. So all those points, I think, are can also add to that, maybe small increments, but can add to a person being totally relaxed and feeling very prepared and in somewhat feeling in command. Because remember, not only is the person deciding on you, but you are deciding on the person. And as far as preparation goes, and to that point, be sure to go with your own questions about the organization. Not exactly. Don't start out with "When can I start?" But somewhere along the line, and sort of at the end of the interview, you'll want to bring up something like that. Sort of putting yourself in the position and making that call for action request as, when will you be deciding on this position? I just want to express that I feel my experience X prepares me well for, being able to step in and become a part of this team and function, and accomplish whatever it is you've identified as a problem. And I'm looking forward to doing the next step of interviews, or I'm looking forward to your response. So something, that sort of says, and also if you can, at the end of that interview process, if you can put yourself in the position of taking the next step of action, if you get them to say, well, we intend to make our decision by next Wednesday, then you can say, oh, that's terrific. And if I haven't heard from you by Thursday, may I just check in? And so you have, you have created the situation where you can make the next call if you haven't heard by Thursday.
Great. Last three questions I'm going to take. Should you match the tone of the interviewer? And I think the other one is, should you write a thank you via email or a hard copy in the mail? And should you, this is a good question here, when they ask you about what the negative things about you, should you answer that truthfully? And how should you ask for the job?
Okay. We've got
so I guess the first
you.
One to mention. Yeah, the first one, I guess, matching the tone, kind of refresh.
The tone of the interview, okay.
Tone of the interview.
Yeah, I think, and I hate to keep harping on this, but the more we know about the interviewer or interviewers, the more we will be able to settle on a tone. We, of course, do mm-hmm. not want to come off as arrogant or too – we want to come off as perhaps a little assertive but not aggressive. And I think, unfortunately, when we know there are a bazillion applicants for every job, that pressure kind of tends to make people a little too assertive, maybe, in some situations. You want to certainly create a tone that puts you in the minds of the interviewers as, this is a person I can work with. This is a person who's going to be a good team member in the case where you're obviously not going to be working solo, which is most jobs. So the tone, do you think that's what the questioner wanted to know?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they want. For example, you have some people that's high energy. Should you give that back to them? Or the person who has low energy, should you give that back to them? Or you should stay ahead of, because I think of a person who's really have a low tone, get not intimidated, but they really don't like people who fast talk. Sometimes it even varies by region. If you're in the South, they take their time. You know,
right?
They're not. You're taking a person from New York coming into the South, you know, to Houston or to Atlanta, which you don't have that same type of energy, and that can be a turnoff with to an interviewer. I guess I'm assuming that's what they're asking for. Should you match the tone, or should you, if you are high, you need to bring it down some and kind of level it out? Or I'm just assuming that's what they're asking for.
I think it's a great point. I was once interviewed in Houston. At that time, I lived in Chicago, and the interviewer said, you need to understand, Sandy, this is not Chicago. So immediately that told me, that me down here in Houston, he said, we just don't work that fast. So it's like, I think that is a great point. You know, I had to sort of slow my tone. And I think obviously when we're nervous, we talk faster. So mm-hmm. I think we have to be aware of that in an interview situation. And the point of empathy is a good one. If you're sort of tuning into the interviewer, if you keep that smile on your face, you know, and you're exuding positive energy, that's all going to be a plus. But yes, if it's a very slow and sort of, you know, thoughtful, methodic person, you want to be enthusiastic, but you obviously don't want to be, you know, sort of over the top with this person is hyperactive. You know, so there's a line there. It's a dance, and it's a delicate balance. It's, you know, each person. I don't know if we can give explicit information, but try to certainly play to the energy level and the speed and the tone of the person interviewing you. But certainly always. Give yourself enough time to be thoughtful. And if you feel like you are rushing, certainly try to slow your speech down.
Okay. And what about writing an email? Should you do an email and hard copy thank you card, or should you do both?
I think you should do both. I would do it as soon as you leave the office, sending an email, a brief email of thanks, is great. And during the interview itself, if you have identified something that will give you the opportunity to supply more information, maybe it's just a casual comment. Maybe both you and the interviewer raise Boston Terriers, and he's looking for a new, I mean, this is obviously created. If he's looking for a pup or something, and you happen to know a breeder of, you know, the best Boston Terriers, you might want to supply that to him. And just in your email, you might say, you know, I enjoyed our, thank you for the interview today, and I feel that I would be an effective member of your team in accomplishing whatever. And obviously make this, again, we're talking brief, and I will get the name of the breeder to you as another, you know, another paragraph. Then in your written thank you note, and I would advise handwritten, give that information. And if there's another way that you can create something else, if someone was interested in some other kind of information that you can supply after the fact, we're going to the principle that the more opportunities you get to reinforce your interview, to re-represent yourself, obviously mm-hmm. you increase the chances that you will be the successful candidate in the end.
Okay. And if they do ask the last two questions about asking anything negative, hey, tell us about that. I can't think of a word right now. Something negative about you, or maybe not in that many words, but every person who have an interview, they say, okay, tell us the things that you're deficient in, or that's not your strongest skill sets. Should you answer that truthfully, or should you just kind of go in between and turn that whole incident around?
Well, I think, you know, it's such a false question, and I think more mm-hmm. and more interviewers are realizing that, you know, no one is going to say that they are the axe murderer, you know, and this obviously is a blemish on their record. So, you know, I think it's not particularly genuine to ask that question, but if they do, I think probably the best response is to either state something that you're, and then state that you are working on it. You know, this is something I am really
okay.
working on, and I have really improved in this area. I used to feel that my deficit was doing my follow-up reports after making a sales call, you know, or something.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last 6 months, I have realized that writing the report immediately after the sales encounter gets the information out, helps me remember the essential ingredients that I want to reinforce and whatever, you know. So something that you have worked on, that you've started to, you know, that you have improved on. The other, of course, ploy that people use is making a negative statement of, my worst characteristic is I'm a workaholic, you know,
mm-hmm.
and obviously you're hoping that the interviewer takes that as a positive. Ah, here's a guy who was midnight, you know, working away. So I think that, you know, I think it's a disingenuous question, but I would definitely use something that illustrates that you are improving yourself, or that what others consider as a deficit, the interviewer may consider as a positive.
Wow. And lastly, how should a person ask for the job?
Well, I think there is nothing wrong with declaring yourself at the end of the interview, or if they're talking about, you know, this will be multiple, it'll be a multiple encounter kind of interviews. It's sort of, you know, this is often the case now that they're staged.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should make a very positive statement at the end of the interview that I'm very interested in this position and I look forward to the next round of interviews, if that's going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely leave, you know, announcing that in fact you are, you know, you are interested in the position, if in fact you are, and
okay.
that you're looking forward to either the decision or the next round of interviews, or, you know, whatever the process is going to be.
Perfect. And a little bit more about your book real quick on How to Write It. Just going to reflect on that. And I mean, I do see you have a lot of articles on your website. Your book can be found on Amazon.com, of course, and local bookstores. How did you publish this book? I mean, all these ideas came to you, and all of a sudden, did you self-publish it, or you got a publisher to take on the book itself?
Yes, the book is published by 10 Speed Press, located on the West Coast, which is now a part of Random House.
Wow.
And we are in the we're in the third edition of the book. If you go to my website, www.sandralamb.com, and click on the book cover, it will take you to Amazon.
Okay, great.
So, you know, so it's sort of that's a two-step process, but perhaps easier than going to Amazon, typing it in, you know, and getting there. So that's a very direct way of buying the book online. It, of course, also is handled in brick-and-mortar bookstores, and if your bookstore doesn't happen to have it, you can certainly ask them to get it, and they will do that for you. But I love to support my independent bookstore, but I often find myself going to Amazon, you know, if I need something right away, and so that, you know, for people in business, that's probably obviously the fastest way to go.
Oh, definitely. And Nate, this particular book is your third edition. Do you have any other books that also you've written?
Yes, you'll see those on my website too.
Okay.
I have a book,
Write the Right
Words. Personal Notes, yes, and Write the Right Words. And those are writing effective messages in notes, and obviously for the one, and the other one, more writing effective messages for the people you are connected to in your life. And they both have some information on this, but the How to Write It book, I think, for everything the job applicant is looking for, is contained in How to Write It.
Okay. And in closing, what would you like to leave our listeners with about How to Write It?
I think, you know, about my book? Is
yeah,
that the
about
question?
Your book.
About my book?
Mm-hmm.
I think it is it's a great tool for both your personal writing and also for your business writing. Because now, of course, we all lead these homogenized lives. So where does one stop and the next begin? To keep right by your computer or on your desk where you write maybe write in longhand sometimes, the kind of communications that you want to really be effective, it will save you a lot of time, and it will help you check to make sure that you have been complete in what you have done.
Wow. I really appreciate you coming on to the program. Again, you can get your all three books off your website that will transfer you to Amazon, and that's sandralamb.com.
That's right.
And those are the three books, which is How to Write It, Personal Notes, and Write the Right Words. Anything else you want to close with a person who is looking for a job? I know we're at 8.3% now. It's pretty steady. Any other comments you would say to that person who is looking for a job, what they really need to do to land one?
Well, I think, you know, to look at getting a job as a job itself, it's I certainly do not want to underestimate the difficulty that people in the job search market are facing, because it still is very tough out there. But do be assured that there is the right job for you. And keep yourself organized. Get up every morning and say, this is my job today, is looking for a job. And be proactive wherever possible. Network, network, network. You can, you know, not only to people in your associations that are related to your career, but people you know everywhere. Sometime in conversation, you'll have the opportunity to say, I'm looking for a position. And obviously, if you are presently employed, you have to be sort of circumspect about doing that. But if you are unemployed and you're looking for a job, you definitely, you know, getting the word out to everyone is going to only be to your advantage. And obviously all those online websites can be really key in helping you locate exactly the right opportunity.
Great. I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming onto the program. Thank you, Sandra Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Appreciate it.
Okay.
This has been another production of Apple Capitalist Group. This is The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. To close with, I'm going to play that last clip that about conflict, and then we would do the ending rolls. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Upset because you just heard your best friend said something unkind about you? Maybe what you heard she said has you feeling all your friends turned against you. Sure, you feel sad, alone, but what can you do? What should you do? Your first angry impulse will be to go right up to her and have it out. Tell her just what you think in no uncertain terms. But wait, not so fast. Sure, it has thrown you off balance, rocked you back a bit, but take time to think about it, reflect. Take some time to cool down. Now consider her side of things for a moment. Put yourself in her shoes. It's called reframing. What was she going through at the time she said it? Okay, now that you're cooled down and have given it some thought, and you've reframed the offense, it's time to have an up-close and personal talk with your friend. Calmly tell her how you were hurt by what she said. Then, give her a chance to explain. The two of you can work through this and get in complete harmony again. See? Now you feel vindicated and at peace with the world, yourself, and your friends again. Personal Notes by Sandra Lamb has lots of tips on apologies, forgiveness, and all kinds of ways to keep loving connections to friends and relatives. Go to sandralamb.com.
Again, it's another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Good day, and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.